Shire is a leading global specialty biopharmaceutical company with a focus on helping people with life-altering conditions to lead better lives. While Shire's portfolio of ADHD medicines helps patients diagnosed with ADHD, we recognize the need to provide additional support to them and their families. And that's why we at Shire value our local, regional, and international partnerships that are designed to develop and enhance programs to improve the understanding and awareness of ADHD. At Shire, people diagnosed with ADHD have our full attention. To learn more about Shire, visit www.shire.com.
To Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody out there. We've got a great show for you tonight. I'm Jeff Copper, your host and attention coach. And tonight in our virtual studios, we got Dr. David Teplin. Our topic is which came first, ADHD or substance abuse? Before we get into announcements, real quick, today is February the 22nd, in the year 2012, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Announcements, real quick. Everybody, if you have not done so, it's time to actually kind of start framing out next fall. It's not too early to begin planning. This year's annual CHAD conference is going to be in San Francisco on November 8th to the 10th. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. As a reminder to our listeners out there, you can learn more, particularly for our iTunes people, you can go to attentiontalkradio.com to learn more about the show, or we encourage you to access our Facebook page at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. On our Facebook page, you can not only post on our wall and see some comments, but you can actually access archive shows. You can see the list of upcoming shows, and you can actually also listen to our show live. If you're one that doesn't like to go to Facebook and you want to know what our upcoming shows are, if you go onto our Facebook page and click the Advertisers and Giveaways tab, there's an area for you to put in your email address for our bi-monthly newsletter, and we will send a list of our upcoming shows directly to your inbox. Let's move on, because we got a great show and a great topic. Again, with us in our virtual studios, Dr. David Teplin. He's an adult clinical psychologist in Richmond Hill, Ontario. He obtained his doctorates in clinical psychology from the Adler School of Professional Psychology in Chicago. His primary area of clinical practice are independent mental health evaluation, DSM-4 diagnostic assessments, clinical consultation, adult ADHD, adjustment disorders, anxiety disorders, concurrent disorders, depressive disorders, impulse control disorders, personality disorders, and substance use disorders. Dr. Teplin is available on the web at www.drdavidteplin.com. He also sits on the professional advisory board of the Attention Deficit Disorder Association. He serves on the editorial review board of many, many different journals. He's also a fellow at the Canadian College of Neuropsychopharmacology, the chair of the Canadian Psychological Association on Addiction Psychology. And with that, Dr. Teplin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
I've been thrilled that you wanted to come on the show. We've got a lot of really good things to cover tonight, so I think this is going to be kind of exciting. I want to begin by asking you, since you have such a diverse background, you have a lot of experience in substance use disorders and adult ADHD, and we're talking about these two topics because there's some commonality. When people come to you with a substance abuse issue, do you screen them for ADD at that time? And conversely, if they come in for ADHD, are you also screening them for substance use issues?
So the short answer is yes. And the reason for that is because although ADHD and substance use disorders are independent disorders, they often co-present and coexist. And we know a lot of things now that we never used to know. So here are a few things to kind of think about. First off, patients with ADHD typically have over 6 times higher risk of developing a substance use disorder. We also know that individuals with ADHD experience an earlier age of onset and longer duration of substance use disorders. In fact, some studies actually suggest that getting remission from substance use disorders among ADHD population takes more than twice as long. So we know that ADHD is a risk factor for substance use disorders. Here's a few more statistics that may kind of put this all in perspective, because it's a great question to open up the show. Here's what we know. Up to about 45% of adults with ADHD have a history of alcohol abuse or dependence, and about a third have a history of illegal drug abuse or dependence. Conversely, if we flip it, an estimate really between about 35 and 71% of those who abuse alcohol and roughly 15 to 25% of those who are substance dependent also have ADHD.
Well, so one more time, if you flip it, did I hear you say that if somebody has like alcohol issues, they're like 75% of the time there's a chance they have ADHD?
Yeah, if they've got alcohol-related issues, there's between a 35 and 71% chance that they also have ADHD.
Wow.
If they are using drugs, we're looking at roughly 15 to 25% of those abusing drugs who also have ADHD. So clearly, although independent disorders often co-present, coexist.
Wow, that's a... Flipping those numbers around, I didn't realize that. That's a huge number. 35, that's just huge.
Yes, it is.
Let's talk a second about substance abuse issues. Is it an addiction, or is it just abuse? Or are those two the same thing, or are they different?
Right. So in actual fact, they're quite different. DSM, which as a lot of listeners know and clinicians know, is the Bible of diagnosis, certainly in North America and the Western world, but certainly in Canada and the U.S., differentiate between two kinds of disorders when it comes to substance use problems. They talk of either substance abuse or substance dependence. The term addiction, although not a diagnostic term, really closely resembles substance dependence.
Okay.
Just very quickly, the difference is this. For substance abuse, what you're looking at is the behavioral consequence or fallout of your substance use. Example, risk of bodily harm. So you're drinking and driving. You are high on marijuana and operating machinery. You are intoxicated and you go swimming. You have relationship trouble with family or friends or partners. There's some kind of role failure, so you don't follow through on your obligations with respect to homework or school.
Uh-huh.
You have run-ins with the law, either arrests, drinking while under the influence, disorderly conduct, etc. That's what we call substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Substance dependence, on the other hand, really has much more to do with preoccupation, loss of control, compulsive use, continuing to use the substance despite either causing or making your psychological or physiological problems worse, and of course strong urges and cravings to use, which really is more closely aligned with having an addiction.
Now, if somebody is the treatment any different, or probabilities of recovery any different if you're dependent on a substance or if you just abuse it?
Well, it depends. Are you talking about in general, or are you talking about if you have a substance use problem and you also have ADHD at the same time?
I tell you what, let's answer both those questions one at a time.
All right. So, yes, they are two different forms of treatment. When you treat substance abuse, you're really looking in many ways at helping the person. Certainly psychoeducation is a big one, educating them about risk factors and the results and behavioral consequences of their use. There's some supportive therapy that goes along with it. Certainly for substance abuse, when we talk about treatment, we also talk about things like either more controlled use or moderate use, going for extended times without using, because we want to make sure that, in fact, the person was just abusing or misusing a substance as opposed to being substance dependent, because substance mm-hmm. dependence is a very different form of treatment.
Okay. So and the dependence, how would if somebody's got ADHD and they've got abuse, you're working with them one way. If they're dependent, how would that differ?
Well, you know, in some ways, there are a few things that have to be differentiated. Firstly, detecting substance use disorders in patients with ADHD can be quite challenging. Okay, so ideally, and I emphasize ideally, the best time to assess for ADHD symptoms is after prolonged abstinence from any kind of influencing substance. Okay, but the truth is that in reality, in most clinical situations, that's not practical. So in some ways, a better approach is what we call the longitudinal assessment for ADHD symptoms. So what that means is that we take a comprehensive history looking and trying to detect evidence of early childhood onset of ADHD symptoms before the patient even began using substances, or that these symptoms persist even if the patient has had periods of prolonged abstinence from that substance. So that's the first thing, to try to differentiate. And the reason for that is because almost all substances over time can look like and mimic ADHD.
So this is fascinating to me, because so what I'm hearing is when somebody kind of comes in, you're trying to segregate those things, and sometimes it can be really difficult to determine really kind of what's primary, what's kind of at play, because if they're having abuse problems or whatever, it can look like ADHD. Am I misinterpreting that? Or sometimes it's just to split that stuff out to find out what you got. Is what I'm hearing you say is sometimes it's difficult to really split those and tell the difference?
Well, it is. And the other problem, of course, is that a lot of individuals with ADHD have an earlier age of onset of substance use and substance use problems. For example, we know that amongst the ADHD population, they certainly start smoking cigarettes much earlier than the general population.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do they often start to smoke cigarettes much earlier, and we usually talk much earlier before age 15, but we also know that those in the general population, not just amongst ADHD folks, who start smoking before age 15, they are more likely, probability-wise, to go on to use other substances, almost like what we used to talk about back in the day of a gateway drug.
Yep.
And in
yep.
some ways, early cigarette smoking before age 15 does play that role of gateway with respect to other substances. And in particular, when it comes to ADHD, looking at nicotine, alcohol, and other drug use, and in particular, marijuana.
Interesting, interesting. Well, I tell you what, Dr. Cohen, we need to run to a break. When we come back, I'd like to ask, we want to talk about those with ADHD, if they are predisposed to prefer certain types of substances. Before we go to break, for our listeners, if you want to learn more about Dr. Teplin, all you need to do is go to drdavidteplin.com on the web, and that's DrDavidTeplin, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
This is your ADHD information station. Attention Talk Radio. You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got Dr. David Teplin in our virtual studios. We're talking about which came first, ADHD or substance abuse. Before the break, actually, we started off the show, I asked Dr. Teplin, when somebody comes in for substance abuse issues, does he screen for ADHD? And if they come in for ADHD, does he screen for the other ones? And it was fascinating that he does, and he was citing some statistics that kind of blew me away. If you have ADHD, you're higher probability of some substance abuse, but when he flipped those numbers upside down, talked about those with, like, alcohol problems, the probability that you have ADHD was 35 to 75%, I think he said, which kind of blows me away. Dr. Teplin, are those with ADHD predisposed to prefer certain or to abuse certain drugs as opposed to others?
Well, here's the thing. There are a few things that we do know. Firstly, we are certainly aware that, as I mentioned earlier, that patients with ADHD typically start to smoke cigarettes, that is nicotine, at an earlier age. And one of the reasons why we know that they do that, although there's many, is that there may be some biological mechanisms that actually underlie both ADHD and nicotine dependence. Because nicotine-based medications can treat ADHD symptoms, and we now know that children of mothers who smoked during pregnancy are at much greater risk for ADHD. What we also know is that a lot of kids who felt marginalized growing up will often gravitate to others who also felt on the fringe or on the periphery. And so as a result, oftentimes birds of a feather flock together.
Uh-huh.
And so this group of people on the fringe may be partaking in certain activities and behaviors, including experimenting with alcohol and drugs. What we also know, as I mentioned earlier, but I'll repeat again, is that there seems to be a higher preponderance for alcohol use and certainly marijuana use. There are a number of reasons for this. When it comes to both alcohol and marijuana, both are considered depressants in many ways. And so for some people, the more calming, taking the edge off, and many of my patients, as I'm sure when you do a lot of your coaching, your clients tell you as well, that they often describe the calming that marijuana provides them. And what they really mean is that if they're still younger, it's the calming of the hyperactivity and the restlessness. If they are more young adults or adults, they're really talking about the calming of internal restlessness, which is what hyperactivity in children and early adolescence often manifests as in later years, you know, early adulthood and then later on.
So, well, I have to tell you, in my coaching practice, if somebody's using alcohol I'm not going to say excess, I'll ask them that question, but it's exceptionally common that they're experimenting around with marijuana. And what you said, the calming effect, is those that will openly talk about it definitely cite that as one of the things that they like about it. So, in summary, nicotine, alcohol, and marijuana, they for whatever reason, are predisposed to that. What about things like prescription drugs or other things like that? Is there a propensity to use those as well, like, or at a higher level than the general population, or is it about the same?
Well, that's a great question. We don't know the exact figures. We certainly know that in all forms of treatment centers that ADHD is overrepresented in those clinical populations where you're treating alcohol and drugs. Here's what we do know, though. Interestingly enough, as we once thought before, is not so, and that is that cocaine and stimulant abuse is not overrepresented in the ADHD population. The thinking used to be that, of course, they love stimulants, and instead of using Ritalin or Dexedrine or something that's more available now to folks, they were trying to self-medicate by using stimulants. Certainly, there are going to be a group of people who are going to like opiates for the same reasons, because opiates oftentimes provide a calming effect. You also know, and we spoke before at the break, that all substances initially have some anti-anxiety and antidepressive properties.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, what happens is that the converse becomes true, and the reverse happens, where over time, in fact, those substances cause or make worse anxiety, depression, insomnia, etc. But there's another very important point that underlies all of this, and that is that we now know that one of the explanations neurobiologically for ADHD is a lack of dopamine among some of the neurotransmitters in the brain. We also know that amongst those that in terms of substance use disorders, that there's also an underfunction of dopamine. And what we know is that all addictive drugs strongly stimulate dopamine, through which they stimulate the reward circuit as well as learning, memory, and behavioral circuits.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, that sounds very similar to ADHD. Of course, what we also know is that impaired dopamine neurotransmission is associated with diminished perception of reward, worsening cognition, and impaired behavioral inhibition. And so oftentimes what you're left with is that this makes life boring, worsens the ability to recognize negative consequences, and really diminishes the person's ability to say no to some kind of enticing distraction. And we see this in both disorders.
You just said something that was interesting. I actually had coached somebody one time who had severe substance abuse disorders, and over a period of time, they said after doing it for 20 years, they got bored with it, and they cleaned themselves up because they got bored. That fascinates me.
Well, and don't forget that, you know, there is a segment of the ADHD population who are highly impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things around being impulsive is not tolerating boredom very much.
Yep.
And one way to conquer boredom, especially if you've got the ADHD bent or brain and wiring in structure, is that you look for novel, excitement-seeking, stimulus-seeking situations. And
yep.
The reason for that is not just to overturn boredom, but we also know that all of that produces more dopamine in the brain, which really awakens the brain. So in some ways, you can see the logic
yep.
of looking for excitement and novelty-seeking, because it actually helps you produce more dopamine, which is what you're lacking in the first place.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Dr. Pepin, we need to go to another break. When we come back, we have an individual in our chat room who's actually curious about to hear if there's any links between substance abuse and autism. For our listeners out there, as a reminder, to learn more about Dr. Teplin, go to drdavidteplin.com. And with that, we'll be right back after this message.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Attention Talk Radio. We got David Teplin in the virtual studios. Dr. Teplin, we've been talking about ADHD, but I did have a person in our chat room who was kind of curious if there's any links between substance abuse and autism, which is fascinating. I never thought about asking that question, and we do have a fair number of people in that space that listen to our show. Are there any links?
Unfortunately, it's not an area that I know a whole lot about, so I'm really not the person.
Okay.
Firstly, I don't know, and secondly, I'm really not the person to offer anything with respect to it. It's a great question for all kinds of reasons. I just do not know.
I'm not aware
of the literature in that area.
That's fair enough. Thanks for being honest, because we wouldn't want you to speculate on something you're not there. But we've been talking about ADHD and stuff. Can we talk about a little bit about any differences in probabilities of those that if a child is treated for ADHD, are the probabilities the same as untreated, and the same for adults in terms of substance abuse? So if they're diagnosed early and they're being treated, whether it's by cognitive behavioral therapy, coaching, medication, stuff like that, as opposed to not, are there any differences in the probabilities, et cetera?
Right. So there are a few things, because it's a great question, but it's multi-layered, so you'll forgive me for trying to address each of the layers. Firstly, there's this issue of when a person has both substance use disorders and ADHD, what do you treat first? That's part of the issue. The other issue is the issue of do you treat one, then the other, or do you treat them together?
Uh-huh.
The third issue is how much of an integrated program do you want to have? In other words, do you want to create a treatment option that uses the most effective treatment modalities available, whether it's behavioral and medical therapies, close supervision, monitoring? So that's the one thing. The other issue is that of do you use stimulant medication, period, when somebody is abusing a substance? Some clinicians feel that that's a mistake because of the potential for abuse and the potential for diversion of stimulant medication. So as a result, some prefer not to prescribe stimulants at all,
mm-hmm.
and in fact prefer to use non-stimulants as first-line treatment.
Okay.
Part of the problem with that, of course, is that non-stimulants have not demonstrated the same efficacy compared to that of stimulants for ADHD. Again, there's the issue of, okay, so to minimize the risk of substance use disorders when you're treating a patient with symptoms, with stimulants, because of the abuse potential for shorter-acting stimulants, there's the thinking that longer-acting stimulant formulations are preferred because they're less likely to be abused, etc. So
mm-hmm.
that's the one thing. The other thing is that we now know that while stimulant medication may improve retention in addiction treatment and in some cases may even decrease harm from substance use, stimulants have not been particularly effective in decreasing drug use or cravings per se. And part of this is because there's a high comorbidity, obviously, between ADHD and substance use problems. And also, as you might expect, there's a relatively high treatment dropout rate in this population, as well as non-compliance with taking medication.
Hmm.
So that's the other thing. The third thing, or I don't know if it's the third, I've lost track now, you'll forgive me, but the other layer, when I talked about multiple layers, is this. There used to be the thinking that, in fact, if you put a kid on stimulant medication to treat him or her for their ADHD, that, in fact, you're going to predispose them to future substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument was a biological one, that somehow early exposure to stimulants kind of primed the brain that somehow down the road they'd become much more receptive to illicit drug exposure. What we now know, in fact, is quite the opposite. Much more recent research actually suggests that, you know, kids with ADHD who are treated with stimulant medication until adolescence were about six times less likely to develop substance use problems down the road compared with those who didn't receive stimulants.
Six times less likely. Does that get them back down to normative data, or are they still slightly above?
Well, it's interesting, because what we also need to know is this, is that that starts changing once they develop, become adults.
So okay.
The protective effort diminishes from almost six times to one and a half times less likely. And there's some explanations for this. The one explanation for this is that stimulant use may actually just delay but not prevent substance use problems.
Okay.
Another possible explanation is that by the time the person reaches adulthood, they haven't got the parental supervision or buffering, which can lead to poor medication compliance and therefore increased susceptibility. But you did raise something else which I want to reiterate because it's true, and it's this. The ultimate risk of developing a substance use disorder in treated ADHD individuals actually goes down and approximates the general population's risk of developing a substance use disorder. So in other words, that treated the risk of developing an SUD or a substance use disorder in a treated ADHD individual is no different than the general population in terms of risk and going on to develop substance use problems.
Wow, that's a powerful statistic. By seeking treatment, it lowers your susceptibility to it, which is really, when you think about it, kind of a huge deal in the grand scheme of things, because if you're untreated and you have those probabilities, because a substance abuse issue on top of untreated ADHD doesn't necessarily move you in the right direction, whereas
right.
treatment, what you're saying is moving in a real positive direction, at least you don't have that as high a risk of that on top of it.
That's right. But the other thing is this, and it's probably something that I should have addressed in the beginning, so you'll forgive me for this. One of the things about vulnerability, ADHD patients being more vulnerable to develop substance use problems, is also if they have a coexisting condition.
Uh-huh.
Because as you know, and as most people know, ADHD is more likely to co-present with other things, including a form of anxiety, form of depression, impulse control issues, personality disorders, substance use, sleep problems, all of those kind of things. But here's what we also know, which actually amplifies the issue. If an ADHD patient also has coexisting oppositional defiance or bipolar disorder or conduct disorder,
mm-hmm.
Then they are up to nine times more likely to develop a substance use disorder problem before age 18 relative to if they only had ADHD alone.
Wow.
And it makes sense from a clinical point of view, because those who are oppositional defiant oftentimes start using substances at a younger age because they are either being defiant or rebellious or oppositional with respect to the authority figure, and that can be the parent or the legal guardian or just society. Certainly with bipolar disorder, we know that, both in terms of the disorder itself and self-medicating the symptoms, and then again conduct disorder, which is a much more obvious disorder in which you violate societal norms.
Uh-huh.
And so we know that certainly conduct disorder and in later years antisocial personality are strongly associated to developing substance use disorders down the road.
Wow, fascinating. Well, Dr. Teplin, we're running out of a little bit of time here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything left that we can kind of cover in about 45 seconds that we haven't touched base that you think would be helpful at this point for our listeners?
Yeah, I do. Two things. Firstly, Both ADHD and substance use disorders are highly genetic, and there seems to be common genes that link the two. There also seems to be some kind of underlying neurobiology that puts the two together, and certainly there is a familial risk with respect to substance use disorders and ADHD.
Wow. That's the increased gene really kind of, that's fascinating. It really makes a lot of sense, particularly with the numbers that we were citing earlier. So with that, Dr. Teplin, I'd like to thank you again for coming on the show. This has been fascinating. We might have to do a sequel to this in the fall because there's so much material that's here. But again, for our listeners to learn more, go to drdavidteplin.com. That's D-R-D-A-V-I-D-T-E-P-L-I-N. With that, thanks again, Dr. Teplin, that'll conclude another edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.
Thank you very much.